Welcome to Outlandish Voices, the podcast, made possible by Vox FM. I'm your host, Laura Gooden. Today's story is A Million Shades of Nightmare, written and read by Kat Sparks.
Sarah Jordan is frightened of the sea. Other children race eagerly toward its smothering waves, skipping and dancing between foamy crests, laughing as they trip and tumble, eyes, ears and noses flushed with salty turbulence. Sarah watches from the safety of shore. She knows she is protected in backyard pools with their chlorine-scented reassurance and crystal depths. Sarah will not touch the ocean. Her mother, exasperated, takes her to the saltwater pools at Belmore Basin on this first Saturday of summer. Here, the deep rich blue of the free Pacific is cordoned off from land by a low wall of brown rock pockmarked with barnacles. On the shore side, twin rectangular swimming pools are set within the yellow-painted concrete. Each one's inside tinted gemstone blue. Sarah watches the powerful arms of lap swimmers cut furrows through the water. Strong and certain, they move to a rhythm as sunbaking bikini girls on land shoo flies from creamy skin. In the second pool, younger girls kick and squeal, clutching at purple pool noodles. Sarah stands between both pools, a patterned towel wrapped tightly around her shoulders. The lap pool is out of bounds to her, she knows, but she prefers its calm and order to the calamity of whoops and shrieks in the family pool. Never before has she seen so much tattooed flesh, and she considers the markings might be magic symbols, protection against the creeping tide. From a distance, one man's tattoo is an octopus. Another is shaped like a spear tip, sharp angles bleeding with age to stain his skin. Sarah stands tentatively beneath the almost cloudless sky, watching a blonde woman in a floral bikini and pearl toenail polish study an advertisement for cranberry juice. The woman gets up suddenly, drops her magazine and walks toward the water, a flash of diamond in her belly button. She bends her knees at the pool's edge, dips her pearly toes into salt water. Despite the protective seawall, Sarah doesn't trust salt water, can't be sure of its constituent parts. It isn't clear and honest like chlorine. Below the surface she spies twigs and seeds, minuscule fronds that might be plants or might be something else. She pictures formless, gelid horrors, invisible stingers free-floating, submerged. Last year, on a school excursion to the beach, an older girl was stung by a bluebottle in the surf. Sarah remembers Micheline, her face red and bloated from screaming, hugging her skinny arms across her chest, rocking back and forth as the teacher ran in search of ice. Micheline howled, isolated in private suffering as the other kids shushed and gawped, screams overlaying the ambience of the safe surrounding world. Splashing snaps Sarah back into the present. A man throws down a boogie board emblazoned with fluorescent cartoon monkeys as a mother pushes through the water with her little human luggage, one child on her front, the other clung behind like a backpack. Where is Sarah's mother? She spies pink sandals abandoned by the poolside in the place where her mother was standing 10 minutes ago. She looks for her in the water, but instead sees an ancient oriental man, arms raised, mouth roundly gulping air, more drowning than swimming, strokes in slow motion. He stops suddenly, stands up, adjusts his goggles as a younger man does a handstand on the edge of the pool near Sarah, balances, allows himself to fall backwards into the water. His friends clap and cheer. Sarah notices how close his head was to the concrete as he fell. She understands he is the type of man who will plunge fearlessly into a raging bluebottle surf and never get stung. Sarah spies her mother at last, standing beside a neighbour up on the concrete steps near the lifeguard's booth. Her mother pretends she isn't watching, pretends she's interested in the neighbour's chatter. The lifeguard flicks at flies with the cord attached to his whistle. Children bundle past him, a mess of flippers, goggles and bright colours. The alluring sparkle of the water doesn't tempt Sarah, despite the baking summer heat. She fears its suffocating, deadly embrace. Unlike every other child she knows, she's never properly mastered the art of swimming. She understands what she's supposed to do. She's had so many lessons, but freestyle is a feat of coordination she can't quite manage. Stroke, kick, turn your head. Sarah panics whenever water stings her eyes. Her vision blurs and she forgets to breathe. Stroke, kick, turn your head, and she feels herself lost to the swirling darkness of below, even in a bright blue rectangle of cement when she can almost touch the bottom. But it's not the fear of drowning that keeps her from the water. Sarah can bob and float and dog paddle. She knows she will not sink. It isn't the water that Sarah dreads, but ocean. She's seen National Geographic photographs of the Portuguese man-o-war with 10-metre stingers blown close to shore by ragged winds. She knows about rock pools lined with blue-ringed octopi. She knows all their names. Ugly bloated pufferfish, surgeon fish with knife-like razor tails, needlefish and moray eels, stonefish and barracuda. It's been explained to Sarah many times that only a few of these monsters are native to Australian waters, but she knows that the oceans of the world are all connected, and she wonders how anyone can be so sure, so certain the waters of Belmore Basin are safe. Every wave and every tide surges with the potential of deadly sea wasps, fire coral, stinging seaweed, sea snakes and crown of thorns. There are lionfish, cone shells shooting poisonous darts, bristle worms and ghoulfish, and worse, far worse. There are nightmares under the ocean skin, so horrifying and unnatural that they simply can't be real. They can't be, but they are. Sarah knows they're real because she's seen the cabinet. Another school excursion, this one to Sydney in the baking heat of summer 2 years past. The entrance to the museum is so cool and inviting. High ceilings, thick stone walls, room after room of awesome treasures, thunder eggs, geodes and dinosaur bones. Instead of tackling the tedious questions on her worksheet, Sarah strayed from the stone-cold trilobites, fossils and bugs held fast in amber, past the stuffed animals frozen in their dioramas, past the giant squid and fiberglass whale. Deep in the museum's heart, wandering alone, forgetting all about the others, Sarah discovered the cabinet of horrors that was confirmation of her darkest dreams. Yet nothing in her nightmares had prepared her for the sight of monsters fully formed without a place for eyes. Things with teeth so jagged and impossible they barely fit within the creature's gaping maw. How could such terrible things be real? How could anything so wrong exist? Sarah stepped back from the glass to take them all in, jawless, boneless, slime-secreting hagfish, umbrella-mouthed gulpers with whip-like tails that tie themselves in knots, vampire squid, gelatinous, goggle-eyed, dotted with tiny lights, switching itself on and off like a lamp, capturing its prey with spiked arms, hideous viperfish with hinged, rotating skulls, hatchetfish, dragonfish, giant tube worms, 8 feet of mouthless, gutless chitin, nourished by smoke-spewing hydrothermal vents on the ocean floor, according to the label typed neatly and affixed to the back of the cabinet with metal pins, living yet needing nothing from the sun. Sarah swallowed gulps of saliva, picturing an army of giant armor-plated isopods trampling the ocean floor, disemboweling everything in its path, dead or alive. She ran back to her teacher, clutching her stomach. Miss Pozoski had allowed her to sit the rest of the museum visit out on a wooden bench in the foyer under the watchful eye of a security guard. Miss Pozoski hadn't bothered to investigate the beads of cold sweat on Sarah's forehead or the clamminess of her hands. Sarah had never told anyone about the cabinet. She wasn't sure it had been real, but she was certain beyond question that no creature was supposed to be like that, all scissor teeth, lanterns and eyelessness. It was as if the bottom of the world had cracked open, spewing forth all the beasts of hell. Sarah knew these things would swim wherever the tide would take them. Monsters without faces have no place to call their home. Might as well make their way to Belmore Basin as soon as anywhere else. She realizes she's been clutching the edges of her towel too tightly. Suddenly she hears her name. Sarah! Sarah! She looks to the center of the pool and sees a brown arm waving. The arm belongs to Jessica Reyes, beside her Marty Week. Two girls from her class waving and calling out, giggling once they have her attention. Sarah! Sarah! She looks back to where her mother is watching. Sarah knows her mother doesn't understand. She thinks she only has to explain over and over that this pool is safe and filtered, as if explanations could ever make ocean water safe. Sarah looks at Jessica's waving arms, imagines her and Marty whispering. If she doesn't get in the pool now, there'll be questions. So far, she's managed to shield her ocean terror from her classmates, shielded by a sequence of pretend illnesses and once a bandage stolen from the medicine cabinet wrapped tightly around her ankle. None of these tricks will work today. Sarah eyes the stone steps in the shallow corner. Perhaps she can ease herself in gently. She looks at her mother one more time, understanding the mileage she will gain from this one brave act. There'll be ice cream on the way home if she gets into the pool today. There doesn't have to be a promise. Sarah knows it's true. She lets the towel slide from her shoulders. She keeps her eye on the wavering blue, pretends she's smelling chlorine instead of salt. She tries to move towards the steps but freezes, and then she knows, Sarah truly knows, the only way to enter is by jumping. Now, Sarah, now, she tells herself. If she waits another second, it'll be too late. Sarah takes a deep breath, then runs and launches herself into the air. She keeps her eyes screwed tight against the stinging salt as she plunges below the waterline where all sound becomes muffled and distorted. She pushes upwards, breaking free, flailing, gulping air. The water is much colder than expected, but the shock of it feels good against her skin. She can't see Jessica and Marty. Sarah resolves she will not glance upwards towards the lifeguard's booth. She will paddle in search of the girls from school, and she will not, under any circumstances, think about the open ocean, or the cabinet of terrors, or the million other reasons why she should have stayed on dry land. Sarah wishes she could mimic the sturdy overarm strokes of the lap swimmers, but dog paddle is the best she can manage. Marty and Jessica will tease her for that. Perhaps she shouldn't look for them at all. Perhaps she should just make her way to the shallow end. Perhaps. Sarah stops still as something brushes against her leg. Just another swimmer, she tells herself. Only as she twists her body around, she realizes no one else is near. Back on the yellow concrete, a toddler in an orange sun hat stares across the water, open-mouthed. Sarah turns as something brushes past again, and this time there can be no doubt. There's something in the pool with her. She tries to keep from panicking, but her chest cramps with stabbing pains. She paddles furiously, looks for which of the pool's four sides is closest. Back on shore, the toddler wails. Multi-voiced shrieks of terror spill out across the water. Something presses against her back, withdraws, and touches her again, probing the knobbly ridges of her spine. Sarah has stopped paddling, but she doesn't sink. She's trapped, pinned on all sides by invisible shapes, like a beetle embedded in amber. She tries to scream, but no sound comes out. Tentacles wind about her ankles. Eyes wide open, Sarah sees people at the pool's edge shouting and waving. Where is her mother? Jessica is there, and Marty, dripping wet, and the lifeguard who blows his useless whistle, red-faced and puffy-cheeked. Whatever's in the pool with her, they can see it too. Their sounds fade gradually into the background, obliterated by the gentle lapping of water against stone. Now there's only one part of Sarah that can move. She throws back her head, gulps a lungful of air, and takes in the wide blue sky, watching, utterly still, as a white translucent crescent moon pushes its way like a jellyfish through clotted seaweed clouds.
That was A Million Shades of Nightmare, written and read by Kat Sparks. Find out more about Kat on her blog, katsparks.livejournal.com. That's katsparx.livejournal.com. Thank you for listening to Outlandish Voices, the podcast, made possible by Vox FM. This podcast was produced by Laura Gooden. Original music by Houston Dunleavy. Find us on Facebook. Search for Outlandish Voices, the podcast. See you next time.